Put it on HBO and check if Crown of Thorns is on.
You guys remember the cave? Do you guys remember that cave where we went into the cave
uh-huh.
and I took my clothes off? And
oh God!
Well, let's not start it like this.
Oh God!
Oh God. Welcome everyone.
In the world.
No one remembers Eric's cave.
No, Ygritte was like, "Hey, Jon Snow, do you remember the cave?"
No,
we
get it.
He's been waiting all week to start the show like that, guys.
No.
I'm glad that you're here.
I had an alternate, much cooler version of starting the show, but I chickened out and I chose not to go that route.
You know, we should consider ways to start the show. I know that it's Friday and that we had more of our epic recap episode recorded just after we watched it on Monday, but Eric, I think we need to take a leaf out of your book and plan ways to start it. I think we should.
You know, one option was with the Mumford and Sons version of The Cave. acoustic, of course.
I don't remember this being such an integral part of the last episode that we need to focus so much on it.
Well, the reason that we focus on it this time is because we didn't the first time. This is the catch-up. This is the episode where we go through and talk about the little things that we didn't quite get to on Monday.
The one thing I would say, though, is that we have a season finale to look forward to on Sunday. So mm-hmm. I think
you're all about the big explosions.
You know what, you guys? You could have started this episode by pointing out that this is, I believe, your 225th episode. Is that right?
Ooh.
Two and a quarter centuries. Of Game of Thrones?
Something.
Yeah.
That's something.
Maybe let me intro the shows, all right? You think after 225 episodes, you know how to intro the damn show.
You just need to take control of the damn show. God. We've told you this so many times off air. if you let us start talking, everything goes to shit.
Well, let's actually start it out with something that makes sense. This is an own from our Facebook wall. We promised to get to some of these. And yes, we will watch the preview for next week's episode. I guess you could call it next week's episode. It's actually coming up on Sunday night. This is from Shelby Lynn Walker, and she's speaking about, I just want to call it the Battle of Castle Black, but let's call it the Watchers on the Wall. Mm-hmm. That episode was amazing. I have no idea who to give my own to. Do I give it to Ghost for eating someone's face? Do I give it to the six men holding the gate against a giant? Mm. Do I give it to Jon for leading the men so well? Or do I give it to Sam for finally gaining the courage to kiss Gilly? I guess my own goes to the whole damn episode. So she wrapped it up nicely for us.
Yeah.
That's our show for this Friday, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
The own goes to the whole episode. Crisis.
Game of own.
Averted.
Owned. It's owned. Done.
Singular. Yep, there it is.
Well, now that we've had a few days to ourselves, guys, have you had a chance to rewatch it and like let any of the other details like soak in? Like, how does it feel to you now?
Oh, how does it feel?
Because you know people at home have been rewatching.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And what an episode to rewatch. And it goes by quicker, I think, the second time, too. It was fast the first time, but the second time you're just like, oh, man, this is so intense.
Yeah.
I guess you have to know kind of who lives and who dies, and then you can relax and enjoy it a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I think that's a great point that you bring up, though, because for you and Zach going through watching it the first time, you probably had no idea who was actually going to survive. I think, Zach, you said you thought everybody was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. You know, for the book readers, you know, we certainly didn't expect to see Pip and Gren bite the dust, but they did. And I think Kate pointed out last week's episode or earlier in the week that, you know, it was probably because you needed notable people, people that as viewers, you recognize, and it's not just like an extra, you know, getting speared on the top of the wall by a giant and falling 700 feet to his death. You know,
that's a really strong spear.
Such an awesome shot.
What acceleration.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, on watching it through second, third time, you know, I said before, I thought the episode was just amazing from a battle standpoint. I think that, you know, in looking through a lot of the comments on Winter's Coming and looking at some tweets and other things, you know, there are certain expectations, I think, as book readers that we had coming into the episode of how it was going to wrap and what the expectation was going to be at the end of that episode. But I think, you know, taking a step back, that it wasn't all bad. You know, I think that there's a reason why they save certain things to the finale, and I'm sure it'll have the same level of impact, maybe even a bit more, depending on how it's positioned. But know that the story obviously is not at its end. You know, with John walking out beyond the wall to talk with Mance, that there still is more to come there. So, you know, again, I think hindsight's 20/20, and taking a second or third look through it, maybe these guys know what they're doing.
Royal Cobroth wrote on our Facebook wall, he said, got to give the own to the showrunners for deciding that after all the crazy episode nines, for once, they still want the finale to have some stakes left in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that mirrors almost perfectly what you said, because we really do have so, so much that is just riding on Sunday night.
Yeah. 66 yeah. minutes is what I believe the runtime is for the finale. I hope that's right. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
That's what I've heard too.
It is so much. I mean, the one storyline that we're probably going to spend the most time talking about is the wrap up of what happened at Castle Black. But I think that when you look ahead, and you mentioned we're going to look at the preview in a little bit, but so many storylines still need to be resolved. And one of the larger ones, in my opinion, is what's going to happen to Tyrion.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that is a big one. Here I am thinking that there are all these plots, too, that couldn't be done yet, but I feel like they still might be. I'm really interested in learning who we see next episode, because certain characters have had what you could call endings. I mean, Brienne and Podrick are kind of just on the road. You get that. The Hound and Arya. Wow. The Hound and Arya.
you Hagrid?
The Hound and Arya.
The Hound and Arya.
The Hound and Arya. The Hound and Arya, I mean, I would hate to see it end with her just cracking up laughing out of desperation, but, you know, that's because I want her to see Sansa. But even Sansa and Baelish kind of had their walking down in the digs, you know, nice threads kind of thing. So I don't know. I don't know what plot lines we've seen the last of, and that kind of bothers me because of this episode being just at the wall. It really makes me nervous. But if the episode is as long as, you know, we saw that it is going to be, that it was announced to be, then I hope that they get a little bit of everybody in it.
We do. We have Arya in the preview. Maybe now would be a good time to watch that.
You think so?
Yeah.
Shall we watch it, everyone?
Yes.
Snowy.
We're not going to make it.
Oh my god. I haven't watched this yet.
I can't figure out if he sees the tree. The lighting is so different.
Yeah.
Have any conception? He probably doesn't see the tree.
He's having the vision.
Oh. Or not. Kiss.
Incest.
People coming.
Ooh, there we go.
That was a shoulder.
Yep. I've seen the analysis of the shoulder already.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, finally, Karen Hines.
I know. I missed him.
Varys.
Dragon.
Varys and Daenerys.
Some kind of two-headed thing.
That's the one you were talking about last week, right?
Yeah, it is. Right at the very, very end.
Ooh, that was quick.
You thought it was a two-headed dragon?
Well, it's two dragons, probably. More likely than not, in a closed space.
Gotcha.
But I famously complained about the size of the dragons in the premiere of this season. So I would argue that the dragons couldn't fit in a friggin' tunnel.
It's small. Not about the size of the dragon.
That's true. Maybe they heard your complaint, Eric, and they CGI'd like two of them together. To make it bigger.
I think that's exactly what they did.
Well, that was a very short preview, but I think that I'm just trying to chew on what happened.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think that it has to be short because it's a season finale, and there's only so much that you want to actually show.
Totally. Exactly.
And you know, just given all the hype that we've seen online, all these different articles, Benioff and Weiss talking about how this is probably going to be the best hour of Game of Thrones ever, mm-hmm. I think that should tell both book readers and non-book readers alike that you're going to get some really epic shit that's going to go down in this episode. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no other way to put it. And you know, to the fact that you don't see a whole lot in this particular preview, hopefully means that there's some surprises that are going to be out there.
Yeah. Right.
This is a joint statement from David and Dan to Entertainment Weekly this week. They said, "The Children is going to be the finest hour of Game of Thrones yet. It's the best finale we've ever done, bar none. The performances from our cast, the direction from Alex Graves, the visual effects work, the new music cues. It's ridiculous." So I'm beyond excited. Yeah. I just, knowing that the people behind a show that has been so strong for this long to say that this is going to be the finest hour, and knowing that so many of the commenters, both Sullied and Unsullied, have expressed their delight in it finally reaching here. I just think it's just hard to be at this point a few days before the finale, knowing that we're about to reach the last episode of Game of Thrones of the season.
Well, it's got one of those episode titles again. We've talked about this. The children could mean anything, right? It could mean that.
No,
the episode...
it can't mean anything.
It could mean anything.
Well, can we just say that the children could be the most ominous title they've ever chosen for an episode so far?
Yes, I think
just
so.
Just the children.
Yeah, and I think it has a variety of interpretations, but I think Micah and I are both thinking of one in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So this video of this preview, I happened to find it on the website for the Vancouver Observer. And just under this, as a recap for this video, they've written, so we have Bran Stark and teenage David Bowie making it to that mystical and mysterious tree. Teenage David Bowie for Jojen Reed. I don't see it, but bless.
I do.
Bless,
I see
bless
it.
Them. I see it. Bless I see it.
Teenage
definitely.
David Bowie.
Yeah, I just want to see Ricky Gervais. Never mind. He did an amazing episode of Extras. David Bowie did, and it was so good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, but Bran's storyline. Look, everybody knows who's listened to this show from the get-go that I'm a big fan of the Children of the Forest. Huge, you know,
you've
very
never
ominous,
met them, but you're
ominous beings.
A fan of them.
Yeah, big fan. I have all the T-shirts. Mm-hmm. They kind of, in my mind's
visor
eye,
hat.
In my mind's eye, they look like the pygmies from The Mummy Returns in the Oasis of Amshir.
Right.
totally like little creatures, but they are the beings in the trees, the ones who painted the faces on the trees to begin with and have since retreated up north somewhere. And I really, really, really hope that nobody's pulling my leg here and that the children is actually more about them than it is about the children. But finding out what happens to Arya, finding out what happens to Sansa, Tommen, there are a lot of children now that we're dealing with instead of their older brothers and sisters who are all dead.
Can we even really call them children anymore, though? I mean, technically speaking, their ages make them children, but all of these kids have seen so much shit go down. I don't think any of them, they've graduated from the title of being children.
Well, they're still the children of their
young
parents.
Young adults, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... they might not be children, but they're the children.
The showrunners are generous with the interpretations of these titles. Mm-hmm. So I know that longtime Goo listeners remember the excitement we've shared in the past, especially when reading through the books chapter by chapter and learning a little bit more inside of the Children of the Forest and their legend as it was told when the kids were in Winterfell. It's almost a tease because I don't want to expect the show to go there, but I hope the show goes there.
Yeah. I feel the same way. You said it pretty much exactly how I feel. Like, I'm really interested in seeing whatever the children may be. But it'll be kind of a weird experience, kind of surreal, because it only exists in my mind at this point because I haven't read ahead.
It's one of those things where we've heard for so long in this series by different characters, right? Dragons don't exist. White Walkers don't exist.
Menace.
Giants don't exist. Everything doesn't exist. And so why should the Children of the Forest be the exception to the rule where they don't exist? They, you know, there's no way. They're just another story, right? Or they've gone extinct or whatever the right term is for that. But, you know, I think that there's a very good chance, given what we've been exposed to so far, going back to one of the earlier episodes where we got, even for non-book readers, or I should say book readers, an insight into the White Walkers, right? And what's happening to those children that they are then taking and whiteifying. I don't know what they're
whiteouting
shit up.
They just have some whiteout.
That's a good one.
But I keep thinking, I cannot help but think, Micah, while you talk, all I do is in my head, I listen to all the other times you've tried foreshadowing things. And I have to say, in this video preview, Jojen is falling down, or sorry, I should call him teenage David Bowie, is falling down. And I recall you saying, not, you know, pretty recently, that perhaps Jojen is getting weaker the closer he gets to this source of power that they're looking for. So I wonder, like, I mean, he's falling down in this preview. Does that mean he's, you know, it's still the same issue where I always think of like the healing power. Once he gets to the Tree of Life, he'll live forever. but the journey could kill him.
I think there is some sort of adverse relationship, right, between Jojen and what's happening here. Because it seems that the more Bran wargs, and assumes his power, the weaker Jojen gets.
Well, that's interesting, because then it's like, oh, there's a certain, like, there's an exact amount, a fixed amount of energy you can pull from, and if Bran takes it all, then nobody
physics,
else
man.
Can do it.
Physics.
Yeah, and is there something to be, you know, is there some magical entity that is, you know, that is harming Jojen, like you said, the closer that he gets? You know, it's almost like his visions are not wanted in that particular space. Like when he was on the other side of the wall, you know, or even in the books, right, we've read through A Clash of Kings, when he's at Winterfell, he's not the sickly individual, but the more he travels and the more he experiences
power.
Yeah, these visions, exactly, the sicker he's becoming, the weaker he's becoming, and you have to wonder what that's going to ultimately result in for him.
You know, maybe it's Santa Claus, actually. Maybe it's like the Red God, who's also Santa Claus, trying to deter kids from the North Pole. You're never supposed to go visit and see where Santa works,
right?
There
we go. That's a theory. Yeah.
I like to think that right now we're in the part of the books. Let's say if we were reading through wherever this is inside of the books. We're just deep inside of the North with these guys, and they haven't quite made it, but we're sort of expecting a conclusion. And everyone has their own conclusion in their mind, especially with the show. We have book readers that have read further and understand maybe things that will happen and are wondering if it will be adapted in a certain way. And then you have us, the Unsullied, who, if we were in the books, would be thinking further and using sort of cues to expect things, but also we're using the cues that we have from the show. We haven't gotten the same amount of magic and mystery thrown at us in the show that we have in the books up to this point if we had been reading the books. And I'm just judging from books 1 and 2 so far. So I'm interested to see if their amount of buildup with the TV show is to make whatever happens in this next episode so impactful.
You have to remember this book, right? Storm of Swords goes all the way back to the beginning of the third season. So if you think through the amount of shit that has happened in this book,
right? Yeah.
I mean, it's unparalleled to anything that's come before it, maybe with the exception of Ned losing his head and with Blackwater. But, you know, when you think back to the Red Wedding and you think back to, you know, earlier this season with Joffrey and Sansa escaping King's Landing and Lysa going out the Moon Door and Tyrion's trial in Oberyn and the Mountain, and there's just so much stuff that happens in this book. And there's still so much more to wrap in this finale. And that's what, you know, I think, at least for me as a book reader, I was concerned about with the last episode. But, you know, if they're able to make it work, then they're able to make it work. And I think the expectations are so high. And so it's great to hear, you know, the quote that you put out there from Entertainment Weekly, because there's an expectation, at least in my mind, of how this season is going to end, that if they don't do something in particular that a lot of fans are anticipating, it's going to leave something to be desired, and it's going to have fans wondering if it's ever going to happen at all.
Well, that's interesting to know that something might not happen.
Of course, it's possible it may not happen. I mean, it all depends on how the episode is structured and what storylines they're really looking to tie up before going into season 5.
Please,
I'm so excited. Damn
please
it.
Promise after it happens, if it happens on the show, you'll be like, that was what I was talking about. That was
oh,
what
yeah.
There's right. so much that will Pinky get swear. Turned over in this finale that I'm not even sure what Micah's talking about. Like, there's like three nice. Or four things that I'm like, it has to happen in this episode. So,
oh man.
I'm not even sure what he's talking about. So, I'm also curious.
Yeah.
From talking with writers at WIC, it's just kind of something we've spoken about before, and I've mentioned it on the show about how the story almost appears like it's in blocks as far as some storylines are concerned. I mean, I think that what we're seeing is, because I've heard that we're forward on certain characters that are like Theon's further in the book, right? Like he's not right. This what's happening with him isn't necessarily in A Storm of Swords, but it's further in the series. So we're getting so many loose ends tied from season one. Even we're getting so many ties back to season one in this season 4. I don't know if you guys remember, but the first shot that we got from Game of Thrones was the last shot that we got from this final episode, essentially, which was in the tunnel. Like, this is where we got to know. We were just like innocent people back then. You know what I mean? We were just like, what's going to happen in this story? And then they go north of the wall. Like, this is sort of where we ended this last episode. And I feel like if it's true, if what the writers at WIC and have always told me, and without spoiling, obviously, that the story is kind of blocked in pieces. Maybe we're blocking off a certain section of the story, and then, like, you know, next season leads into the real crazy shit, and this is like just the first taste we get. Like, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that this is about to be ridiculous, and that from here it just gets more and more ridiculous.
So that's I guess a difference in kind of what you're looking for. And like, I want this finale to be like this huge climax, and then after that you can just reset. Like, I hope it answers every question we have. I know it won't.
Oh, no.
I hope it's like all the huge thing, but I don't want it to get crazier. I want it to be like, okay, now we're starting back. I want the beginning of next season to feel like the beginning of a new kind of show, for the fact that all the plot lines are closed this season.
I want Oberyn to come back to life and then ride Sir Pounce into battle with the White Walkers.
Mm-hmm.
Sir Pounce, of course, will be much larger to support Oberyn's weight.
Right.
What else? Hodor will learn to say another word.
What will it be? Will it be popsicle?
Yeah, popsicle.
Fist or smash.
Smash, Hodor smash would be fantastic.
Or fist.
No, I actually am. I've been very quiet during this discussion because I'm sorry.
No, it's hard, right? You have to be careful what you say. Yeah.
I have no idea what to say because I've been called out a couple times by our eagle-eared fans being like, Kate doesn't realize it, but she's spoiling stuff. So now I'm like, I could say something here, but even if I'm like theorizing, like, what if this were to happen, then that's, you guys know, like, that doesn't happen. And so I'm just fucking gonna shut my mouth.
I mean, well, there is more that happens, not just the opening scene with Bran and Jojen and Hodor. I mean, there is some other stuff in there that, you know, that bears mentioning, at least. You know, the conversation between Tywin and Cersei and the cut to a little brother and sisterly love going on. Tyrion in his cell, right? We wonder what looks like he's in a little bit of a darker cell now than the one he was in before. So perhaps he's where Ned was staying all the way back in season one, the black cells, right? I think that's what they're called. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy because you don't know what's going to happen to him. I mean, you think, based on what happened to Oberyn, that he's doomed and that he's going to die, but he's a big fan favorite.
So, well, I mean, that doesn't mean that he is safe. We are worried.
Yep. Man, I wish there were like a judge's save on this show.
Like a fan vote?
Yeah.
Like Big Brother season one.
Like once a season, you could get a judge's save where they kill the character, but then the next week, with enough votes, you call the number, and then with enough votes, they're shown to still be alive.
They have to somehow write them in a resurrection.
There's an article going around where George was quoted saying that he would enjoy 13 episodes a season, and we've been inundated on the site with emails of people sending us a petition to sign because people really want to see 13 episodes a season. Also, 90 minutes long per episode, so.
What?
Wow. I'd sign on for that.
That would be awesome. I'll sign every signature there is.
Yeah, get on that HBO.
Especially my response
to
every single one of them.
Quit slacking.
Especially if the Hound 13 movies was in every one of them. Him and Arya, of course. I mean.
Yeah, maybe we could just do, like, for the off season, just a running 24/7 stream of following the Hound and Arya around, right? Like the Truman Show.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's in the preview.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the preview. He's menacing someone with a shoulder.
He's alive.
That's what we know about that.
Yeah, someone has a shoulder.
Yep. There is confirmed shoulder action.
Confirmed.
Yeah.
I saw, listen, the press photos they sent us had the shoulder cropped out. I'll say that.
What?
Oh, really?
Are you serious?
Yeah. The shoulder's cropped out.
So it was an unintentional trailer thing, you think?
No, it definitely was intentional. I mean, it was you know, it's a preview. They want to spoil shit just because they feel like they have to. Do you think the showrunners want a preview to go out? I doubt they do. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
I bet they're just like,
I think
wait
that's
for
why it's so
pitches.
Short. They're like, put it however much you need to, but don't make it look like it makes any sense.
They're like, how long can we have it? They're like, 20 seconds? They're like, 22? He's like, fine.
Yeah.
We do get a little bit of Daenerys, but then I think, you know, the rest of it is really focused on Jon and what looks like, you know, in addition to his conversation with Mance, just more battle taking place.
Yeah, he looks like he gets ambushed by wildlings or something because he's not going up there with anybody else. So it's just him versus a large group of people.
He doesn't even have Longclaw.
But he does make it to Mance, though. It looks like they're having a conversation. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty
badass.
They
must capture him, I guess. And
I'm very excited.
Well, there's people on horseback that are fighting also. So There's definitely more fighting to be had in the season finale.
Oh, that's right. Wildlings don't have horses, do they?
Not to my knowledge. They have big-ass mammoths.
Because horses are free north of the wall. Isn't it cool how horses run like birds? You ever notice that? They like run like birds on the plains.
You're thinking of birds.
I'm thinking of horses. You know how they run in like a V formation?
Oh.
They really do.
You know, we're talking about running horses, running birds, but, you know, there was an own given to somebody else's running. And this is, of course, coming from Jen Cleland Moore, who says, Gilly gets my own. She ran along the hilltop above Ygritte's wildling campfire moments before the attack on the wall. How did the wildlings not see her?
They don't have night vision.
Apparently not. No, she did that quietly. I mean, as soon as the show showed that, I was like, hey, that's Gilly, clearly, you know, running away. But she makes it to the wall just in time.
I like this this particular own. This is Santiago Sanchez. My own goes to the giant that got pissed when his bro giant died and single-handedly lifted the gate. Way to display a solidarity and emotion that transcends the simple-mindedness typically displayed by the big bad guys of the show. Hashtag no regrets.
I like that. And that's true. He really did. That roar
was very emotional. Yeah.
Yeah. They were friends. Do you think that they were kin? Were they brothers or just like friends? Or
well, like how many giants are left, right? It's kind of like The Last Unicorn where you see one giant die. You're like, well, there's three of us left now. That really pisses me off. So they were related in some way, surely.
Mm. Well, at least in spirit. And he was pissed off and he did lift the gate. And I have to say, Santiago Sanchez, your own is very own worthy, because I feel like there was so much animosity between the giants and the mammoth in that scene. They were just like, get on with it, you know? Like, and we were all wondering, why aren't they shooting a flaming arrow at the mammoth? Because he has all that fur, he could possibly catch on fire.
Oh,
or at least, you imagine how bad it would smell, mammoth hair getting burned. But either way,
do you want to read the own, or can we read this own? Because I happened across it, and that's why I'm laughing like an idiot here. from Doug Clayton, who says, my own goes to the woolly mammoth running away with his ass on fire. We've all been there, little buddy.
That was a great shot. I love that.
Oh, man.
Oh, poor mammoth.
All he had to do was rub it in the snow. He would have been fine.
Oh, it's so hard to get up when you're a mammoth.
Yeah. I don't know where to go from there. Yevgeny Kopman says, my own has to go to Gren and the men who held the gate. Taking down a giant is no easy task.
How do you know, Yevgeny? You don't know.
Yeah, Yevgeny.
Thanks for the on, but you have no idea.
Just look at the casualties. It took six of them.
That's true. And we do have to give it up for Gren, because even though he didn't pass in the books, as I've heard, what a way to go out.
Yeah, that was baller. It was a baller death.
It was a baller death.
Reciting the vows, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Inspiring his frightened brothers to valor. Damn it, mm-hmm. Gren, you're a beautiful man.
You're a beautiful man, Gren. Your valor.
How about Dave Clark, who says, own goes to Maester Aemon for seeing hot chicks in his blindness.
That was so sweet and sad. Like this own, I completely agree with it. Own goes to Maester Aemon for seeing hot chicks. However, let's not marginalize how incredibly sweet that is. That in his blindness, and he's like over 100 years old, all he sees is the woman that he loved in his youth. Before he swore it all off and came to the Night's Watch, and he still remembers every detail of her face, and he sees
the color of her eyes
more real than Sam in front of him. I was just like, swoon.
The shape of her nose.
Talk about panty melters.
I love that line. How he says that she's more real to me than you are, because he's actually seen her before.
I also like this one from Chris Grizzly Adams. Anyone with the name Grizzly Adams, first of all, is badass. In my book. He says, first time sending an own that wasn't through tweets. My own goes to Gilly for showing she was more of a man than Janos Slint.
Oh, yeah.
Did anybody else think that when Slint walked through the door, that shit was going to go down? Like, I really thought he was going to, like, kill her or something. And I'm glad that he didn't. I'm glad that he ended up being in the corner like a sad, sad person when Sam came in. But yeah, I was worried.
Yeah, I mean, and she's looking after her kid in that room, too. And he's just there for his own, you know, sake. He's actually walked past guys, crows getting killed just to go down and hide.
I liked that the expression that they exchange in that room, because he walks in and he looks at her and she looks at him and they're both surprised. And to me, there was a moment where Janos realized that he was his bravery level was on par with a teenage girl with a baby. This was where he had the choice to be like, just wake up and be like, oh God, this is how far I've fallen, and then go back out into battle and fight like he's sworn to do. And instead, the next time you see him, he's cowering in the corner on the floor as if that realization simply was not enough. He was like, ah, it's me and this teenage girl and her baby, and this is where I'm staying. These are my people. And then when Gilly is faced with danger, she's the one up there trying to defend herself and her baby. Janos has nothing to do with it. So own goes to Gilly. She rocked it.
It speaks to his character, though. I mean, if you go back to the City Watch, right, when he was in control, he sided with the people who had the money and who were in power. But at the end of the day, was it the right thing for him to do? I mean, it eventually cost Ned the head that was on his shoulders. And I think, you know, when you see him, you know, get sent down there, I mean, it's basically a trick, right, that Gren sends him down there. It is Gren, right? It tells him that Thorne needs him. And once he gets down there, he basically just shits his pants and looks for the nearest refuge. And that's, you know, inside this room with Gilly. And I mean, Gilly's the one who stands up for herself. She's the one who comes to fight, and it's Slint who's kind of cowering in a corner. And I wonder if there's any repercussions for that, the fact that he abandoned his men, basically. And
it's Sam that walks in later, right? And Gilly tries to attack him. And it's interesting because they show Sam turning around and seeing Slint on the ground, and just like a non-reaction. He's like, yep, that's about right. And he and Slint isn't in the rest of that conversation or the rest of the episode. And Sam totally writes him off. He's like, yep, okay, I'm not even going to try to inspire that guy to go out and fight.
Craven.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder what will follow, because surely Sam's not going to like, you know, all right, well, you were hiding there too, I'll keep it to myself. Sam's probably going to tell someone that happened. I feel like the decision in Slint's mind to do that, to be a coward, have it on top of the wall when he was like, need a blow? Yes. Yes. Like, I feel like then he decided, well, I'm not going to do anything. When I get down there, I'm just going to sneak in an alleyway and find, you know, I have a key to this place. It's where we store all of our legs of lamb.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
He
sucks.
Yeah. I like that Gren had to basically forcibly remove him from, he gave him an excuse. He knew that Slint was not up to really commanding at all. I mean, he had basically a breakdown in front of all the men. And the fact that Gren was able to give him a way out and let John step up really made things happen.
The juxtaposition between Slint and Thorne and the beginning of this episode, where John is basically talking about, where Sam's talking about the fine print and the vows, he immediately says, I don't think Sir Eliza or Sir Alistair would agree with that. And in my mind, it's like the writers are giving John his own form of credibility there. Like, he's not trash talking their Lord Commander. He's speaking as if the Lord Commander has a say in what Sam does for sex. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And even though we're about to face a battle, this is still the kind of person that he is. Like, he's still following orders and he's still respecting who's in charge. And I think that whenever they share that moment together, and Thorne is basically saying, the reason why I was such an asshole to you was because if a leader questions himself, not only if a leader is questioned by a bunch of little shits who have ideas, but if a leader questions himself, then everything could possibly go to shit then, because who's leading? And I just feel like they really painted a really good picture between those three characters, and even those four or five characters, like, playing off of each other and what duty means and how people and their personalities reflect how they carry out that duty. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to note that John, although he has gone beyond the wall several times and he has consorted with a woman, like, he's had a lot of chances to shit talk Alistair Thorne, to lead a mutiny. He's got the people to do it, to not do what he's commanded to do. He goes up to Craster's Keep when Thorne orders him to, even though Thorne thinks it's basically an easy way to murder him. He's doing everything that's required of him as a brother of the Night's Watch. He's actually extremely lawful and obedient. And he still ends up being this character that's rising through the ranks. I think he has respect for Thorne, even if maybe Thorne doesn't deserve it, Thorne has always been a thorn in his side. He respects the position. He respects the post. And he's a good soldier.
I think that Thorne realized that, though, when they were standing on top of the wall together. Yes. And the fire was burning, the music was pumping, and the enemies were marching. I think he like looked over at Jon, and maybe in that moment was just like, it was a real dick move sending him to Craster's Keep with those guys. And he came back, and he's standing here with me. I don't know.
And he's not pushing me off the wall right now like he could do. Yeah.
It was interesting. And we got such a great scene from him when he was like, I said knock and hold, you cunts. Like that the whole bit, everything that his character had, the epic charge, the epic speech. Like I want to think that in the books when he's like yelling now with me, there's just George R. Martin's caps where he just pressed caps and it's like, you know, going in like the Rohirrim are coming down the hill, shit like that. Like it's just that moment was, I can't wait till we get there in our read through because it's neat. It's good to see these characters move around so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's also good to see Thorne because he's been for the last several years of this show, he's been the master of arms at the wall, right? He's the one who drills them in combat. So to have him actually prove that he deserved that post, that he wasn't just a blowhard that got it because he had a sir in front of his name, that he actually knows a thing or two about battle and combat, you really see him put through the paces here and you're like, all right, Sir Alistair, I get you. I'm feeling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we had an own sent to us on Facebook from Mr. Thomas Hedwin Savage, who says, my own goes to Sir Alistair Thorne for when he saw Tormund cutting down his men, gave a fuck this guy look, and went and charged him down.
He did. And Tormund's huge. Huge guy. Tormund's and frightening. And Alistair just goes right for it.
I'm trying to think back to just contrasting Thorne and Slint. And the good thing is, I mean, they're at the wall, so there will always be another battle to fight. Maybe Slint will get some redemption. Maybe Slint will fight in the next battle. Mm. I mean, whether Sam will turn him in or not, where's he going to, you know, how are they going to punish him? Are they going to send him to the wall?
Right.
You know?
Or they could just behead him. That would be fun.
it's kind of like a lofty thing for them to be like, oh, we could do with one less man right now.
Right.
You know, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe they'll make him Maester Aemon's squire or servant.
I think that's an interesting point that you raised, though, is not going ahead and punishing somebody like Slint right now because, let's face it, you know that you still have a whole wildling army to fight. You know that there's White Walkers out there, and the less men you have is only worse for you when you look at the larger picture.
But Slint is beneath contempt with what he did here. I mean, all the men who laid down their lives, even if they don't want to, even if they were scared, he is the lowest of the low in this area, in this episode, and for his actions. So if they did kill him, I wouldn't be shocked because, I mean, he's bound to just not serve them even in the future if they want to write him off as being the coward and then killing him. I could also see that happening. But if he can be, say, relieved that he was spared, or, you know, if he can kind of get over the mental hurdles of dealing with battle and actually become hardened and stronger and able to actually fight in a future battle, I would like to see that actually happen even more than him dying.
Well, I think that Jake Sourwood on Twitter wraps up Jon Slint so far in our discussion. He says, you own nothing, Jon Slint.
That's true. The anti-own.
You know, we did get on Facebook two unexpected owns. I was not expecting to read these.
Right.
Zach compiled together. These are great, though. These are absolutely, absolutely great. The first from Mark Bender, who says, I'm keeping my own. Because the Hound wasn't in this episode. Fuck the King.
Fuck the King.
Fuck the King.
And even the new one. Why not?
Yep. Even the new one. We don't like him either. And second from Michael Davis, who says, my own goes to Daenerys for giving it a rest and not being in this episode.
That's harsh. Sam.
It's harsh. Yeah. She's a little mean. It's interesting. I think that the fan attitude toward Daenerys has really shifted this season. She used to be every Daenerys scene was awesome. There were dragons. She was killing people and it was cool. And like this exotic beyond the sea thing. And then she ended up being, there was a lot of friction for, certain scenes that took place with her, like, her wedding night to Khal Drogo and, her showing up as like the great white hope for the brown people when she was rescuing slaves. Everybody didn't like that imagery. And now it seems like she's, how did our Facebook friend in his rant describe it. It was fantastic. But it was basically like she's playing Judge Judy in this pyramid in yeah. Marine, and she's not doing a whole lot. You know, she's mad at people. She's not mad at people. Where her dragons are baby flying around eating goats. And mm-hmm. so I think that her scenes have been met with some heat. I think people are this particular own that she wasn't in this episode is an attitude that I've seen reflected across the internet. It's interesting.
I'd like to think that we're being tested, that like this is the natural progression of what it takes for someone to actually rise to a point of power from nothing. Like she's been through lots of different levels like you've described, but like right now she's just doing the busy work that's necessary. Mm-hmm. It's like, right. I've taken over these places. Now I have to literally sit here and handle business. Right. And if you want to be a true fan of mine, you want to be a true follower of everything that I do, you wouldn't go online and say bad things about me. And later on when I come with my dragons, I'm going to fuck all of you up. Like maybe yeah. that's what's going to happen.
Look out, internet.
Yeah, she still has the trump card. She still has the dragons, and she cannot be burned by them.
And I think the other thing, too, is, Zach, you pointed out earlier with Theon, like how we've moved so far forward in the storyline. The same's true with Daenerys. And it's going to be interesting to watch how that plays itself out heading into next season. And she is a character that... I don't know that anybody really enjoys her scenes as much anymore. You know, Kate, to your point, like it's hard to, and this is not, not necessarily the direction I want to take it, but you know, Howard Stern has been very vocal.
Private Parts.
about those actually, and how was very, visible in the first season,
sure.
and how she has not been that way at all in the last several seasons. And look, I'm not saying that that is what makes or breaks a scene, and that's a completely irrational argument that I just made. But I think that with with her, it's just hard to get around her storyline. You know, it you don't know like nothing major ever happens. It's like, oh, it's Barristan. Oh, Ser Jorah has been dismissed. It's like.
Right.
You don't get any major moments where, you know, maybe even with the House of the Undying, it wasn't as epic as it was in the book. I mean, I know we couldn't include that in the show because there's just so many things that she sees that foretell what happens in the future that you would completely spoil things if they were like shown the on
wedding.
Screen.
Yeah, and the Red right. Wedding is definitely to our one. Dead Wedding episode, the dead one. Yeah. That's where we did House of the Undying, yeah.
It's yeah, cool. But like those are some of her more... amazing scenes, and it's like it just feels like
that's true.
They don't go anywhere. Like, and she's out east. She's so right. removed from everything else that's going on in this story that it's hard for that to come across as strongly as some of the other things that we're seeing. Like, hell, I enjoy watching Arya and the Hound more than I do watching Daenerys because her scenes they're so repetitious too. It's like sure. it's the same stuff over and over again.
I want to go on record and say that. I'm uncomfortable with implying that her scenes are boring because we don't see her tits anymore. I think that is, although I know you're quoting somebody else,
but Howard
Stern. I know. I'm just saying I don't want that to be the attitude that is reflected by this podcast whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely not. We don't think that, yes.
No, but I also wanted to say, I think that there's the point that we are seeing now this sort of dull bureaucratic side of what it takes to rule a kingdom is really interesting. I mean, it's boring. I get it. But what's interesting, interesting is very boring.
I like it.
But no, what I mean is that we are seeing sort of maybe what it felt like for Robert Baratheon to usurp power from the Targaryens, which she has now usurped from the Masters in Meereen. And so that first, this is a parallel. She's absolutely stealing these thrones, like she's becoming the queen of these cities, just taking them because she can, because she has an army, which is exactly what she's so hell-bent on avenging in her hometown. So I think that that's an interesting parallel. I also think it's interesting to note that this is probably exactly what Robert Baratheon went through, right? Like he was a young man, he took over a kingdom, and then he had to rule it. And that's the part that he hated. This is the part where he turned from a handsome young warrior into a drunk who whored around with women, And who loved to go hunting, just vanish and kill things because that was his blood. He was a warrior and he wasn't a king. And you're seeing that with Daenerys. She's got the potential, but she could mm-hmm. very well diverge right now. This is a really crucial point for her as a young ruler. You don't know where her storyline's going to go. If she is she cut out to actually rule, and she kind of gets to do her trial run in Meereen, and see if she can actually handle it, if this is something that she's going to be any good at all. She has her good moments. She has very many bad moments. But if she wants to rule King's Landing, this is where her mettle will be tested. This is where she'll learn those important lessons so she doesn't mess it up as bad as the Baratheons did.
Yeah, it's just weird because we know that it's a slow burn, and we know that, like
it is
mentioned earlier, this is the process. Like the showrunners right, are taking right. us, and the story is taking us through a much longer situation, and we've got to see hints of how it goes for other people, like with Rob and his rebellion. We right. saw a little bit of what's going on in Westeros, and that's how it goes with the War of Five Kings. But with Daenerys, you know, she's separated from all of that. You know, like you're saying, Kate, what if she fails? What if, like, it turns into, you know what, the slaves aren't really doing it for me right now. I'm just going to massacre everyone that's not useful and then go take over Westeros. Like, that would be right. pretty crazy.
Sure.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but I mean, right now it's a little storybook for her.
Yeah, it's poised on the edge of something. And although the poising is taking quite a long time, I do think that it's interesting to keep in mind that this is the reality of ruling a kingdom. And if this show is about anything, yeah. it's to show the reality of, like,
true.
Brutality of yep. history and what it actually took to rule kingdoms and that sort of, like, people get their hands dirty and you don't hear about those in the stories later. And all you'll hear about 200 years from now is the beautiful dragon queen who mm-hmm. freed the slaves, you know, but you don't see all the fucked up shit that she did because you don't hear those details or the boring stuff that she had to do, you know, hear mm-hmm. petitions from farmers and everything else. And it's these doldrums of history that will get swept under the rug. And it's, I don't know, it's interesting to me just to kind
so
of
when you listeners are thinking back to when Game of Thrones was a television series that was on, and this podcast that you used to listen to called Game of Thrones that was your companion through this, you're going to think back of all the crazy moments and stuff that happened, but you're going to forget episodes like this that took place between important episodes where we dissect and discuss
right. and the discuss things of that Game are coming forward.
Yeah.
But can I clarify something from earlier too? Because I don't yeah. want to make it seem like
no one thinks that you think that though, Micah.
No. But I do think there is a large group of people though, and you know it became a sort of a story because Howard Stern was the one who brought it to light. But
right,
you know, when you become accustomed to seeing those things on TV, and look, nudity plays a huge part in this series. I mean, they're not bashful about it in any sense, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think, though, that you know, her storyline has received a lot of scrutiny, particularly because, you know, despite what Kate has just said, and I agree with a lot of the points that she made, you know, it does become repetitious at times. It does become sure. a little bit... maybe boring is not the right word, but I mean, it becomes a little bit more difficult to watch because you have so many other intriguing storylines that are going on. And I think that there are people who have the expectation that she should be, you know, naked in certain scenes because that would draw more attention to it. I'm not saying that's right.
Here's a good question then, because I think that, you know, try and compare this to the Melisandre subplots, okay, for a second, because her last scene, she was in a tub and naked, and was that just to draw attention from the audience that they cared about that, you know, plot mechanization, do you think? Because Daenerys now is her own woman. She's not needing to appeal to a horse lord, which is like back in season one, she yeah. needed to dress scantily so that she could, you know, make her way. Now she's her own woman, and she's determining who's in her bed, you know, at yep. night, and she's not needing to dress that way. Melisandre, exactly. however, I don't know if it's still, again, plot machinations, you know, kind of keeping us interested, or I don't even know what to make of Melisandre. But thinking of the two different characters, though, those two, I mean, one of them has since put on clothes, and one of them seems to be getting more to the other direction. So what
I don't
does that
think,
mean?
I think Melisandre doesn't care. I think Melisandre doesn't have an agenda. She has no sense of modesty. she has seduced Stannis, obviously, but I don't think that she necessarily cares about her sexuality. And in the presence, certainly, of the queen or anybody else who's not furthering her religious agenda. I think that she's not that, as far as HBO's impetus for putting her nude on screen, I think that's pretty obvious. But as a character, I don't think Melisandre is super concerned about her body. She always strikes me as a person who is not actually inhabiting the body that she's showing.
That's good. I like
she's
that.
So unearthly, and that speaks volumes about the actress too. She's doing this amazing job of playing this sort of unnerving character. So Melisandre to me is very different from Daenerys, who has transformed from someone who is treated as a very sexual creature to being an extremely powerful woman. And part of that too is that she doesn't have to take her clothes off for anyone. You know, she makes Dario take his off for her. And it's it's a very good power play, and it's nice, and it speaks to her growing power. And to break immersion, I believe that there's a rumor that Emilia Clarke signed a contract that she wasn't going to get naked anymore. Or at least they revealed that one of the actresses signed a contract saying that she wasn't going to get naked anymore, and the reigning theory is that it was Emilia. So,
and the particular scene with Melisandre, though, we discussed that her nudity was part of her ploy with Selyse and with what's going to happen and what she hopefully plans to do with her daughter. And I think that it was a tool in that situation. And I think that that can't be said for a lot of scenes in this show with gratuitous nudity. And sure. I'm not a prude. I'm not a stickler in any way. I think whatever, the human body is the human body, and it's not a huge deal. But there is something to be said about nudity being cheap in a lot of different ways. And I don't think that when we look back at the series as a whole, we'll look back at a million scenes and think that it was a cheap way for the showrunners to get some clicks, essentially. Like, I don't think that they were taking advantage of a young girl that was an actress. I really believe that they're trying to adapt this show as close to the book series as possible in spirit. And I think that showing that way, showing that kind of Daenerys and showing who she is now is so powerful. And when we're able to go further along and really look back and have a broader perspective, it's going to stand out even more. I was in Walmart today, and I saw a display right in front of the doors. And this is a very rural area. And the display was full of Game of Thrones and True Detective and True Blood DVDs. Nice. This is crazy to me.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones there were umbrellas and Chigorex usually are.
Get your umbrellas. Get your unadulterated nudity.
I just think it's cool. And it's interesting that you brought that up, Micah, because I feel like those kinds of viewers of the show populate the ratings, and they're great. And hopefully, eventually, along the course of the story, they start to understand the small details and principles that George has written into his story and that the showrunners are attempting to adapt to the best of their abilities, which is there are many kinds of people in this world, but the best kinds of people are the ones that usually either die well, die happily, die with good purpose, or continue to go on doing good things.
Right. Yeah, because everybody, all men must die. So if you have to die, you should die with purpose and honor.
Absolutely.
I was wondering if you guys had a thought about a question that has now left my train of memory. Where was it? It was about, oh, okay, here we go.
There it is. Ha!
Got it back. Mm-hmm. I have no way of putting myself into the mindset of a viewer who would watch this show for the TNA. And I'm wondering, like, I've been such a huge Game of Thrones fan for so long. There's no way that I could just be like, I gotta tune in and watch those titties. Like, I'm not that kind of person. But I am curious, of the 7 million or so viewers that are tuning in for this episode every week now, what percentage of people are just in it for the egregious nudity or hopes thereof? Like, how many people are actual Game of Thrones fans versus people who are like, well, I know there's gonna be some naked butts on this show today, so I'm gonna watch that. Like, who?
I hope none.
We know. Yeah, I know. I kind of hope the answer is zero, but I don't know.
How easy it is to see a boob? Just go to Google. If you're watching, if you found a way to watch Game of Thrones,
yeah,
you can go to Google, yes, or Bing or whatever search engine that chooses the sponsor of our show in the future. Type boob. Just type. There it is. All of it is there that you need. You could type in hot anything, hot stool. You get the best looking stool you've ever. You don't have to watch a show for it. So don't populate the comment threads tweets and emails with questions about nudity and stuff. And Howard Stern's way off base. Fuck that.
I think so, too. I do.
But you know, Kate, to answer your question, though, I think if you combine that with violence, I think the number would go up. I mean, sure. I don't, there's no way that everybody who watches the show is in it for the story and is in it for the fact that they've read a Game of Thrones or they turned it on one day and they just became really interested in the plot line. I mean, there are people who just watch it because they know, hey, you know what? I might see this character naked this week, or hey, you know, there could be a really awesome battle scene, or somebody's going to die a really gruesome death. That's just just the way that it is. But I mean, it's definitely not the majority, but there's certainly a good percentage of people, I would say, that watch it for that reason.
Well, and to each his own. I don't mean to belittle people who are watching it. Everybody should watch the show. Everybody just watch it. I don't care what your reason is, but I don't want that percentage of people to be so large and influential that we lose track of the beautiful storyline that's been created so far. Because we have now, I mean, we've been renewed for seasons 5 and 6. I know. So we've got at least 2 more years of this coming up. Hopefully much more, because they'll be splitting those books down into like half book per season or maybe farther. So we have a lot more Game of Thrones ahead of us, if all goes well. And I hope that, you know, they continue to have such high quality bar for story and for detail.
I don't think they're going to sacrifice it for anything. I think we've got some good shit to look forward to. I was just looking at Apple TV today and browsing through HBO Go and was going to rewatch the episode for tonight. And I just thought to myself, okay, I'm going to Game of Thrones. First off, there's not 3 seasons on there anymore. There's 4. Okay, click through to 4. There's not 3 or 4 episodes there. There are 9 episodes that are watchable. And we're right before the end, and it's scary. Because this time next year, we're going to be looking back and thinking about how all that has happened in this season play into what we see in S5, and it's just exciting. We're nerds. You're listening to the show because you appreciate the story like we do, I think. So thank you for sticking around.
Or you love Micah's velvety blanket voice. In which case, that's get in line.
I can't speak
for you. Or you're a hopeful young man.
We will have
speaking of hopeful young men, shall we wrap up our conversation about, well, everything in the world, the episode coming on Sunday night, and I guess the episode we saw on last Sunday, shall we?
The children are coming.
We have an email here sent to us from a Sir Mosh. I didn't take his real name because he signed up Sir Mosh, and I thought that was pretty cool. He says, "Hey, Goo hosts, I had a couple thoughts about the latest episode that I wanted to share. I've been thinking about it since whatever episode John was arguing about freezing the tunnel through the wall, but the latest podcast really got me thinking. He says, I think freezing the tunnel would have been a pretty bad move. Think about it from Mance's point of view. He sent a task force over the wall to capture Castle Black and open the gate. Why would he attack directly at one of the 3 points along the wall that he knows to be defended when there are hundreds of miles of undefended wall? Because the gate makes things 1,000 times easier for him and his army. So if the gate was frozen, he's just going to pick a random mile marker along the wall and start climbing where there aren't giant sides and no one there to blow the horn. So I'm going to stop reading the email there because that clearly is enough. He's interested in hearing our thoughts on this.
Okay.
I think that's a fucking great ass point because we wanted him to just freeze the tunnel, but there's a huge wall.
Sure. Here's the problem. I don't know. I can't say because I haven't met all of them, but I don't know what percentage of the Wildling army is actually in climbing the wall shape because the wall is, first of all, humongous. Second of all, constantly melting. So like if it gets warm, then the wall sweats, I think is what they refer to it in the book.
Wall sweat.
I remember the walls. Mm. Yeah. You got serious wall sweat to worry about. And so in order to like, you have to be a pretty,
I foresee a huge Axe commercial in the biggest product tie-in ever.
Wall sweat.
It's not going to be called Axe. It'll be called Scythe, obviously.
Scythe.
Yes. So I think that having people climb up a sheer ice face over and then back down, when you have women, you have children, you have belongings, you have livestock, it's to me a non-starter. I don't think that actually is a feasible option for Mance. Even if half his army is warriors, they're not going to leave their families behind, you know, because they know what's coming. They know the danger that's in the north. They know they have to get out, which is the reason they're trying to leave the north in the first place. And they're not going to leave the women and children behind. I honestly believe if they're going to the trouble of assembling this entire wildling population into a migration south, they wouldn't stop at the wall.
That's another great point.
Thank you.
So I guess I can see both sides. Yeah, I can definitely see how the tunnel would be the one attracting factor for them to attack Castle Black, because as this Sir Mosh has pointed out, there are so many unmanned areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that gate is the only way through that they know of. I mean, even with Sam, right, that he's able to get back through, but it's only because he has the capability. I mean, I don't think it's as evident in the show, but he's only able to get through because he's a member of the Night's Watch.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to go into any more than that, but, you know, I think that is very much the case along other places at the wall. I mean, really the only way to get through is to go around. And I don't think that they have the resources to be able to really go around the corner, so to speak.
You have to sail to do that, right?
Isn't yeah, it you do. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know,
they need ships.
Kate pointed out, they're not in any condition to scale the wall. I mean,
right.
Think about it. These are, in some cases, giants. I mean, their weight is not going to be supported, you know, as they start
by the
to
wall?
Climb.
Well, they might have big, giant climbing things. Like, they had big arrows.
Right.
So, you never know.
But there's right. chunks of the wall that come off. Yeah. There's, right. The wall's not super. I also realized that they say the wall is weeping, which is much cooler and more fantasy.
That's so much cooler than
wall
sweating.
Sweat.
Yeah,
so sorry, listeners. Cool. Now you got to live with the phrase wall sweat in your mind.
Yeah. Oh, that's horrible. This is a good question. I think we have a few days, listeners listening, until the Sunday night approaches, and we have to like start cascading into oblivion, which is waiting until the next season and all the cool stuff that comes in between. So if you are sitting at home and you've heard both sides of the wall in this theory, horrible. Tell us what you think. Cause right now, cause I was pretty convinced after I read this email that I was like totally wrong, that flooding the tunnel would have like just split them up and made it even more difficult. But that's so true. They have so many people to take care of. Like they have to get through the tunnel, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
if there was any other way, man, the wildlings.
Well, the wildlings, the task force could have maybe, let's say, killed everyone, and then they could have just slowly melted the wall. I don't know. And the guys on the other side could have just been a distraction. True. There's too much. Tell us, send us an email, tweet, yes. Facebook. Eric will tell you how to do it.
Weigh in on this issue.
Yes. Weigh in. Like the Giants. But if you want to send us your owns or comments leading into the finale of Game of Thrones Season 4, cannot believe
the children.
We're already here. Hit us up on Twitter, twitter.com/GameOfOwns. On Facebook, as we mentioned on Monday, the wall is still standing, so get your scrawlings in on the wall while you still can. Facebook.com/GameOfOwns. Or, like Sir Mosh did, you can email us. contact@gameofowns.com is the address. And then there's iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
Micah.
There is iTunes. Yeah.
Forgot about iTunes.
iTunes, buddy. How about it?
What you got for us?
I have a couple of reviews here.
Oh, really?
Yay. Yeah, oh, yay.
Just played music. I hope everyone's celebrating at home.
So the first one here, we might be able to do something about. It's from Diamond D87, and they say, even though my tweets are never good enough to be read on the air, I love this podcast. Okay, Diamond D87. If that is also your Twitter handle, we will keep a special eye out for you on the next episode.
Eric.
Just hey, look,
write better tweets.
Just,
that's all you have to do.
No, it's not the quality. It's just, it's really.
No, maybe if you showed your tweets more, we would care about your tweets. All right.
Talk more to tweets, Howard Stern about that.
Better probability you'll get on the show.
Wow. You guys want to know the secret to your own getting read on the tweets?
No.
No, it's a simple secret. It's a simple secret.
What is it?
Be among the first 30 to 60 people to send us your owns.
That's
because you're lazy.
You do it?
Is what you're saying.
Catch the show. No, catch the show when it airs. We eventually run out of time reading them. You know, the music can only go on loop for so long before people's heads explode. It's a real issue.
True.
So, be among the first 30 to 60 people. In order to do that, you got to watch the show on East Coast time. We do. And, As soon as Micah sends out that tweet asking for owns,
just send us your owns as the episode's going. Pause the episode, send an own.
So Diamond D goes on to say their candor and pacing are great, and I love that they all have different perspectives on what's going on in this complex show. Thanks for putting on such an entertaining podcast, Danny. Without dragons,
thanks for listening, buddy.
Cheers, Danny.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Victor with about 10 nines after his name says,
good,
fun, insightful podcast. The gang doesn't take themselves too seriously and do a great job dissecting each episode without giving out any spoilers. They post two episodes a week and don't repeat themselves. It's a nice, fun, well-done podcast with great audio quality and solid editing. There you go, Zach.
Hey.
Good stuff without any silly gimmicks.
That's not true. You want to hear this?
Yes.
That was a gimmick.
Was it like a sound effect that was like, boop?
Something.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't even know. Something.
Another one here from Going, who says, you bow to no man. Here's an older person bowing down to the younger generation. Your shows are the best and have been since the old Potter days. You have such a knack for rhythm and comedy. You beat most talk show hosts, hands down. Hope someone is going to invest a lot of loot on all of you guys and your brilliant futures.
Thank you.
Well, that's nice, though. Nice to hear. That's
Thank you nice. For the kind words.
Yeah.
See, we don't read iTunes reviews so much because if we blush, our heads will explode.
The final review comes from Gaga Gulino, and they say, fantastic, one of the best. I listened to several Game of Thrones casts, and I like them all for different reasons. I love this one for the solid, serious discussion and the wonderful personalities of the hosts. There's less joking around than other casts. I don't know what they're talking about. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I come to Owens for the more serious analysis of the episode. The hosts have great personalities and interact so well with each other. Highly recommend. Great podcast.
Thank you.
What do we say?
I'm taking credit for all these, even though I have no idea if they've been left since I started the show, but thank you.
It's always a possibility with these iTunes reviews that they're actually from last year, but... No, I think these are all very new.
My arms are extended, spread out, and a big hug.
Head on over to iTunes if you haven't already and leave us a rate and review. It is the month of June, so nothing less than five stars is acceptable.
Yep.
We have to thank each and every one of you for making it with us this far in season four. It is almost a sad moment that we are days away from the final episode, but let's take heart in this that we're all doing it together. We will see through the end together.
I can't wait. Can't wait to dig in.
Can't wait for... And that's where you insert all the bleeps for all the things I just said that are going to happen in the season finale.
I fucking am so pumped for this episode. Like, I'm going to watch the one before it and maybe even the one before that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about making, like, the Game of Thrones cookbook food and just for, like, me and like, my dogs. Uh-huh. And I'm just going to, like, watch it and eat and sing the theme song and be, like, covered in goosebumps the whole time. Oh,
if you're going to eat bad food, I will too.
Yeah. No, good food. Yeah. I'm a great cook. Fuck off.
Food that's bad for you.
Now you're like Doritos and your Mountain Dew. You kids.
Some Baja. I love it. It's in can form, everybody.
It's Baja.
You know, as they like to say on the Game of Thrones Twitter, there is only two sleeps until the season finale. And it's pretty crazy to think that we have made it all the way through season four already. I mean, I remember we were going through book two and we were, you know, just getting hyped up for the season, wondering, you know, what kind of previews there were going to be, what kind of, you know, new characters we were going to see. And, you know, now that we're just 2 days away, basically, from it all being over and us having to suffer through an entire year without Game of Thrones. It's,
another on season. Damn it.
Freaking crazy.
Thank you for being here with us, people.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here with us. And additionally, in, you know, we usually do the owns of the episode, but sure enough, fast enough, we're going to be asking you for your owns of the season.
Goodness.
Owns of the season are coming up.
We are beyond excited to spend this next week with you and many, many, many more.
So with that,
see you guys on the other side.
On Twitter, follow him.
We love you.
Love you. Bye. I thought you meant like on two legs with their heads bobbing back and forth. It's like, never seen a horse run like that, buddy.
Like ducks?
Clearly, like you've never been to Singapore.
Like an ostrich?
Oh, jeez.
I've actually touched one of those. True story.
An ostrich?
Yep.
You had to get all touch you shots back? After that.
It did touch me back. It was beautiful. Its eyelashes were so long.
Ostriches are jerks.
Did you lick them?
There's a farm. I think these farms exist all over the place, but it's like a zoo farm where you can go and buy a bucket full of like feed, and you drive around in your car slowly, and animals will approach you and stick their heads in the window and eat out of your bucket.
Oh my God. This is a thing. I need to go there.
This is a thing. And I know that ostriches are total dicks because when I was a kid, the ostriches would run at your car and shove their long ass necks in the window and eat your food really violently. And the food would go all over your car to the point where like you'd see an ostrich running at you, be like, roll the windows up. Let's go.
Fuck that ostrich. Have you ever felt the top of its skull? They have like the hardest skull I've ever felt.
Do they like headbutt each other?
I don't know. I never asked. I know goats do.
That's a mating call.
We have to thank all of you for making it with us. Let me try it again. Okay. I almost said a bad word.
Thank all of you for making out with us.
Yeah, please.